Yo, 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 what's up, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to yet again another fantastic indie creator interview. It's your Caper Sir Cody, and we're keeping it geekly with our returning guest, Isaac Fox. We're here to break down Pure Intent Issue 2 in Mistress Izumi's Adult Lessons. Before we dive into that, Isaac, how have you been? The last time you were on was for Sucky Busted Issue 2, which, if I'm not mistaken, became one of the top ecchi comics in the lower 48 states.
No, it is the number one Kickstarter.
Oh, let's go.
Ecchi comic in the lower 48.
And let's go.
Well, Captain America doesn't count as ecchi, I don't think. Maybe it does, because Captain America is pretty amazing. I would never take that away from that. That book is fantastic. But what our big selling point is that we are the number one, repeatedly the number one Kickstarter comics in the biggest city in the lower 48. And I say that because Jacksonville, Florida is the largest city in the United States, if you don't count Alaska. Alaska has three or four cities that are just absolutely massive, and those dwarf the city of Jacksonville, despite our city being the largest in the U.S. outside of that by square mileage. Our city limits go out in the middle of the swamp, that's why. But it's still a nice little accolade to put on there. Like, oh, hey, this is the biggest city in the continental United States, and we're the number one Kickstarter comic in it, like, three or four times running. That's wow, that's nice.
What does that do to you? Like, does that add a lot of pressure for that next issue to come out? Like, it just seems like that would be a hard thing to keep maintaining. Number one spot, you know, everyone's fighting for that.
It's hard to say, because I always make the emotionally stunted, because things just don't hit me for a long time. Doesn't matter what it is. Even when I graduated college, I didn't realize I graduated until like a year later, until it finally dawned on me. And it's kind of the same thing here. That being said, Jax isn't the most, it's a nice thing to say and it's nice to think about, but Jacksonville also isn't like a massive city where creators are congregating. It's not like I made the most popular comic in like LA or New York, where you have a lot of creative people and a ton of creative minds. That's not like creative minds in Jacksonville. They're just not doing this. Mm-hmm. Where if you go out to those kind of cities, you know, you could probably just walk down the street and run to five different comic creators in LA or New York. So it's a nice accolade, and it was advised by someone in marketing that I start using that more, and it feels really nice, and it's amazing, and it's shocking to be able to have any kind of accolade like that. But at the same time, it's like, well, it is great, but it's not as great as it sounds. So keep your head on your shoulders, stay humble, and keep moving forward. And that's all I try to do.
I mean, we were talking backstage. You have how many fulfillments now for that campaign?
So Sucky Busted number 2 was close to 700 individually customized packages. That is why this barrier is behind me. I have 3 4-foot high stacks of Gemini boxes of packed comics that will be going out tomorrow morning.
And that's just you doing all that?
No, we have a new shipping manager, Benedita. Okay. She's helping me out now, which is why our fulfillment is so much faster. Normally it would take me like probably 4 months to get everything packed and shipped. I think this time, once the books finally got to me, it's going to take me about 2, thanks to her. We're still perhaps not as fast as some, because some guys have a full-size staff, a full warehouse, or what have you. But the issue we run into now, as far as fulfillment goes, is that the impact of COVID is still being felt in the paper industry. So it still takes us about 3 to 4 months when the books are ordered to actually show up, because the print shop has to get the materials to make the books. And we do work with professional, you know, industry comic print shops. They still run into that. So that's the only real hang up I run into now. It's like, well, guys, look, everything's ordered, but I have to wait. Not only that, but I don't pre-order the comics to be made, because the way my Kickstarters work is I order the number of books I need once funds clear, once the backer kit is done, and I order based off the numbers that were ordered. Mm-hmm. I don't be like, okay, I'll just buy 300 copies of this cover right here, 400 of that one. I don't, for lack of a better term, shoot from the hip like that.
Yeah,
we wait until we get the actual numbers and put it all together. And I order extras of everything, of course, because things happen. Books get lost, damaged, you might need recommendations, whatever. But that's part of why it takes a little while. It's a waiting game of, well, hurry up and wait. Give you that
so
one a lot.
Was Succubus issue 2 your largest campaign to date?
So far, yes, by a long shot.
So what do you think kind of was some of the elements that led up to that, you know, some of the success, you know, I don't want to ask you for all your secrets, but just some of the things you think you did.
No, it's not even a secret, because I say this all the time, and I say it. I've been asked to do panels at conventions for Kickstarter, like what it's like, and I will tell you straight up, I am not a good case study. Do not, if you want to make Kickstarter comics, you're already doing that. Don't look at me and think you should follow me. That's a terrible idea. And I'm not saying because like, oh, I'm correct. No. I'm saying because I 100% got circumstantially lucky. And what I mean is, I was making comics for Kermisi, which is my main series of my passion project. And I was making about $3,000 or $4,000 a run, which I thought was pretty good. Like, oh, for someone who the world's never heard of, that's not bad at all. Mm-hmm. So I was like, okay. But I just so happened to live in a place where I just so happened to know a guy who just so happened to own a comic shop, who just so happened to end up getting a job working for one of the top 3 cover artists on the planet, and then all of his friends. And meeting through him, I met those guys and people way bigger than me who had way more experience, knowledge, way wiser than myself. And I was able to talk to them and listen to them and incorporate their advice into what I did. And that's when I went from 4,000 a campaign to about 20,000. And mm-hmm. from there, I was able to cultivate my audience and treat them. I still believe that part of Kickstarter, it's not so much what you offer, it's can we trust you? I forget, it's like, I think it's like 48 or 51% of projects don't get funded. And on top of that, it's like 30% of those never fulfill anything. So you're battling this feeling of distrust that backers have, and they're right to do so. But I think with us being around for several years, and I think this is like our 10th Kickstarter, we are listed as a backer favorite on Kickstarter, which I'm very happy to have that.
That's good.
We can prove to our backers, you can go to the comments on any of my campaign and see that our customer service, one, we pride ourselves on the best customer service and backer service on Kickstarter, period. And we've always kept our promises. We've always delivered. We always offer transparency. We put out updates about once every 1 to 2 weeks, but hey, this is what's been shipped. This is what's going out. This is what we plan to do. So if mm-hmm. you're not shipped yet, it's coming. We're working on it. And I think that's a combination of those factors are what allowed me to go where I've gone and hopefully go further.
You know, customer service is the biggest thing you can do. I even know as just a podcast, we were talking about this, you know, backstage, offering that red carpet treatment when you can, will go leaps and bounds for your brand. People will.
There's rules I have about it.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
My people, I know this is going to sound so dumb, but one of my rules, and luckily Brooke handles all of our Facebook interactions. She's in charge of that. She'll run things by me if something's important, but normally she just handles it. One of the things I told her is like, look, never ever write the word thanks. If I see thanks, I will flip a desk. That sounds so disingenuous and such an off the shoulder, I don't care about your response. Just say thank you. Because the full thank you sounds way more respectful than just thanks.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's little things like that. I mean, during college, I was a manager in retail, which is a terrible job. And those out doing retail, my heart goes out to you. I'm sorry. I know that job is rough and I hated every second of it. I fantasize very often about bashing customers' faces in, but I wasn't allowed to do that. But it did teach me some skills. And that skill is, even an unhappy customer or backer is an opportunity to show what you're actually about and what you can do. And I can prove that. This is how mad this made me. Another time, I had a backer comment one time, and I hate that because comments, everybody can see that. It's public.
Was it about the person who said they didn't get the fulfillment and then you had the proof they did? Yes, I remember that.
Like, I can track this to the time. Because we have tracking numbers, mm-hmm. and the guys responded to we DM'd him the tracking info because it's public as your address. We don't want to privacy. We're not going to ruin that. But the guy responded later, replied back to the comment we replied with him saying, hey, you guys were right. LOL. I found it in a package of stuff. I'm like, yes, you did, because we did what we said we would do. I always do. I know that package went out. Sometimes packages do get lost. It happens. And they contact us. We'll take care of it. It's not very often that happens, luckily. Mostly it happens overseas shipping.
That's the importance of a paper trail, too, though. Making sure your end of things is as clean as possible.
Look, I will be straight up about this. I'm terrible. I am terrible at math. I am mathematically completely an idiot. When I was in school, I tested in the top 2% of every category except mathematics. It was like bottom like 98%. I am terrible at the numbers. That being said, in this industry, numbers are your best friend. Learn to love them because they don't lie to you. Numbers are just the truth at all times. And there's something beautiful about that. And older me now loves numbers and likes the math around it. Younger me hated it. Times
change. So, since we're on the subject, let's talk a little bit about your thoughts on, just classic anime and manga versus today's style and standard. You know, how do you feel about that? What direction do you think we're leading towards?
I think we're getting more commercialized, and I'm sure that's going to sound like every old codger is going to say the same thing. I like one of the videos Flash gets put out where it's one of the Titans and he's like, please let me end. Let my anime end. That's kind of where I feel like we are, where series just refuse to end. They last 10 plus years. And I can't hold the creators of the studios down for that, because the reality of it is, as selfish as or shallow as this may sound, if the cow's making money, why are you stop milking it?
You got to.
Why did Boruto exist?
Yeah.
Boruto exists because Naruto made a lot of money. That's why it exists. And people continue to purchase things for it, so it's going to continue. Same, as much as I love Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball
Z. Yeah, I was about to say it next.
Yep, I love them. I grew up with Z. I grew up with Dragon Ball and Dragon Ball Z, and I absolutely love them.
It was supposed to end at the Frieza saga. That a lot of people don't realize that when Goku turned Super Saiyan, that was right when it was supposed to end.
And Gohan was also supposed to be the new main hero, but everybody loves Goku. So I can't be mad at the studios behind that because it's working. People like it. And we especially live in an age now where our nostalgia is our number one sold back to us item. It's repackaged and sold back to us. That's why we're seeing remakes of everything. And now anime is doing it with Trigun and Kenshin coming back. And we'll probably see more of that. I like the golden era of anime, like late 80s, like mid maybe to late 90s. Mm-hmm. From episode one on a lot of those older series, you already knew what the end game was. What's going to happen? I'll use my favorite anime ever, Outlaw Star, as an example. That Galactic Ley Line is talked about pretty early on. And you're like, okay, well, this is the series. He's going to find this thing eventually. Mm-hmm. Something's going to happen. He's going to find this. That's how the story's going to end. I know that. How does he get there? And with that definitive ending, which I'm not saying modern anime don't have definitive endings, but being so transparent and open at the very beginning, I now know what to expect, know what to look for, and then I get there in 24 episodes and I'm happy. That being said, there are some longer series. Like, in my opinion, Fullmetal Alchemist Brotherhood is the best written anime of all time. It's not my favorite.
My girlfriend would probably agree with you 100,000%.
I can't pick anything wrong with that series. Mm-hmm. And I mean,
I think I tried to watch the first one with her, and she like made fun of me, and she's like, "No, we have to watch Brotherhood." Like,
Brotherhood is better.
LOL at you.
They're both good. Brotherhood's better. And I think that we've gotten to the point now where every industry inevitably does this. I think we're seeing it now in gaming, especially, where creativity is kind of pushed to the back in favor of proven marketing methods and marketability. I think one reason the 80s and 90s anime was so incredible was because we didn't have that yet. Experimentation was much more welcoming. We were much more looking into weird and just insane and seeing what we could do. And a lot of stories that didn't last very long. That's when a lot of single anime movies came out. Ninja Scroll is one of the ones that got me into anime, and that one is, by today's standards, extremely graphic. But it was fantastic, and it has a beginning, and it has an end. I think I made a series of it later. But we had things like that. That's the kind of stuff that I preferred, where like, okay, this is going to last X amount of time. We're not going to do like some series and just keep going for 10, 20, 30, 40 seasons. Like, I can use an example. I love My Hero Academia. I think it's a great show. I think it's amazing. I love that it's a giant homage to American comics. And I love all the things they do with it. And I have stopped watching it because it has gone on too long for me to continue watching. I am now bored. I prefer the series that ends. Also, that hand-drawn cel-shaded animation looks better than any of this modern stuff.
Yes.
By metric mile. I will not hear any arguments on that.
So, do you ever... Go ahead.
Good?
I was going to say, do you ever think we'll see a fusion of like Eastern and Western styles like in one?
We already do. We already are. Because if you want to get historical, after the war, Americans brought Disney to Japan. Disney was used as influence for modern anime, and in some cases, manga. Because the king of comics has been the mouse for a long time, where I believe it was some of like the old, like, Daffy, not Daffy, the duck, his duck.
Scrooge?
I don't know why I'm blanking. Donald Duck, where Donald Duck was outselling Superman and stuff back in the day.
Scrooge has his own comic though too, right?
I think so. I'm not sure. I'm not an expert on any of the major classic comics, unfortunately. But they've always been good at that. So when they brought all that over, anime and manga have borrowed from Disney since then, and now Disney borrows from them. So it's kind of this long, like spinning, like two dogs chasing each other in a circle. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what happens. When I was in college, they told us that good artists borrow, but a great artist steals. I didn't know what that meant, and it sounded so disingenuous. But after working in the industry, I'm like, no, I get what he means now. You're not stealing ideas, but you do take inspiration a lot from each other. And you can see that when you look at things that modern Disney's putting out, or more anime-ish stuff's coming out. Not to mention the original Teen Titans. That show was mega combination. That's probably the perfect combination of Eastern and Western.
Comment. There was a tweet on Twitter, and it's been like, name a canceled series that you would love to come back. I'm like, season 6, Teen Titans.
I don't know what's... They even poke fun at that in the Teen Titans Go show. So I don't know if that's been a thing they want to do, or like the studio won't let them, or I don't know.
It's like one of those things. I want to say I heard something rumbling that we could see a possible bring back.
The movie talks about it.
I wouldn't be surprised.
The Titans movie like talks about them coming back. But like, I don't know if that's something they're going to do or anything. But I think that show's a really, because that show, the opening theme was performed by a J-pop band. Mm-hmm. And then when the show itself was Teen Titans, who are DC Comics, but Western characters, but there was a lot of anime tropes, and they used a lot of anime facial expressions and the big sweat drops and that kind of stuff. So that show, I think, is the best combination of the two styles and animation form that I've seen. So I could also argue maybe Last Airbender is kind of a combination of the both. I've seen people say that's anime. That's not anime. It's made in the West. But it does have a lot of anime and Eastern influence in that series. And then what you end up with is Last Airbender, in my opinion, is still the best serious American cartoon ever made.
Would you say that King of the Hill is the best Texan anime?
Oh, you're about to make me flip a desk.
No, I'm just joking. Back to comics.
Because almost every one of my friends loves that show. And here's the thing. I am from the very deep South. King of the Hill is not funny to me because everybody in that show exists and I have met or grown up around all of them.
I love it.
So it was no longer funny to me. Now it's like, no. You think this is funny? These guys are real and they're down the street from me.
I love it. That's
awesome. It was too real for me. I'm like, no. Kudos to Mike Judge. He's a genius and all that fun stuff. Mm-hmm. And the voice actors did a great job with that show. And older me understands that Hank's actually like a pretty good person to be.
Yeah, yeah. Peggy was the evil one.
Little bit. And if they do that show today, I want to see how Bobby interacts with My Little Pony. That'd be really funny to see Hank freak out about that.
Wow, Bobby. Back to comics. Let's talk Pure Intent Issue 2 and Mistress Izumi's Adult Lessons. We're here to bring up this Kickstarter. Let's go ahead, hang over there right now, and see what all this hype is about. So let me go ahead, and we're adding this to the screen right now.
Let me pull it on my monitor real quick, because obviously I need to do that.
Currently looking at Pure Intent Issue 2 and Mistress Izumi's Adult Lessons at $17,560 of a $4,500 goal with 229 backers, 22 days left to go. So you're just 8 days into the campaign. Everyone watching right here is the link. Check it out with us. And if you can't back, put it on Facebook, put it on Twitter. Word of mouth is 100% free.
Yes,
Isaac, please. how you feeling about, you know, a week into it and just killing it? Holy crap, out the gate, man.
I don't know how to see. It's that emotionally stunted thing. I don't know how to feel. I'm like, okay. I feel like in my head, I have two stereotypical Asian parents in my head, where they're like, "Why ain't no doctor yet?" Even though you're 5 years old. That whole like old trope. Because I'm like, okay, I'm 75, 60, and 229, but why aren't you hired yet? Why aren't you doing a better job? And that's part of my brain tells me I need to do better. And that's not true. This is just how Kickstarter goes. And it's going really well, and I'm really, really excited. I didn't know if Pure Intent would... I don't think Pure Intent will be up to the level like Suck You Busted was, because it's not the same kind of story. Pure Intent's a very personal story for me. It takes place in the Kremisi universe. It's main cast. Two characters are 14, one is 19. So you don't have a lot of that abrupt, you know, TNA kind of content that we have over on Suck You Busted, because these are children characters, so we don't do that in that book.
You know, I'm gonna be honest with you, it took me like 5 seconds to realize what you meant by TNA, and then I put it together. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. That's why, like, we have a Spy X Family cosplay cover on this one, because I'm like, I don't care if it's popular or not. I think this is really cute, and I want some stuff with cute, because these are children in this story. Now, the end of the story is very violent. It is the first comic I have ever had to have a panel pulled out of in my entire career.
Ooh.
When the artist got it to me, I had to have her take it out.
Too gory?
Bad timing.
Okay.
Because all I'm going to say is that the Pure Intent revolves around a group of children who are enslaved by a pirate clan and forced to kill each other in an arena for the sake of gambling and sport. And the pirates are forcing these children to do this. And the main character, he has the ability to use a power that humans have, but it's very rare. They are using, whoever loses, they force this kid to go in and kill the loser as a big spectacle with his power. And in issue two, we see them about seconds after where issue one left off, and it's them escaping from these pirates. But at the end of the day, they're doing pretty good, but it's a group of children versus professional hardened criminals, which means not everybody's going to get out of there alive. And when you have involving children, there's this neat thing where Eastern versus Western and how we display things happening to kids. I think a great example is the original Pet Sematary, where the kid runs out into the street and the semi hits him, but all you see is the semi, and then you see the little shoe fly through the air. Anime doesn't do that. Anime will show that kid getting hit.
That scene messed me up, though. Even though it didn't show the kid getting smashed, I still remember being like 6 or 7, being like, "Why am I watching this?" Like,
it's a rough scene, and it's like, and especially getting older and knowing friends with kids and all that, and having a godson. I'm like, oh, that's just, that hits so different now.
So, how does it feel to be, I guess, showing that in this book? I mean, like, I know you say you really don't feel too many emotions like that, but I mean, do you approach it a little bit differently, knowing that, you know, one of your friends with kids might be reading it?
Not as much, because I'm not worried about the kids reading it or anything like that, because the series, well, they shouldn't read it anyway. Anything I make.
No, I meant like one of your friends children. With kids, not children.
No,
because
it's. Most of the friends I have are also anime guys, or they are comic guys. And they're from the time period, because we're that age. We're from the time period where anime was a lot bloodier and wasn't afraid to go there as much as it more so is now. Mm-hmm. It's like everybody freaked out when Goblin Slayer came out. I'm like, this is watered down version of what we had back in the 90s, man. This is nothing. This is nowhere near as violent as it used to get. I was pulling from series like Iron-Blooded Orphans, which is a fantastic series, but there's a scene in that where they open a door to a compartment hole and there's a bunch of kids, and they're like, all right, kids, you stay here. And these characters are also young, and most of them are children. And one of the kids pulls a gun and shoots one of the hero characters, which then has them, one of the other good guy characters, moving to that door with a machine gun and just firing into that room full of children. You don't see the kids getting shot, but it's pretty obvious what just happened.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, I like that shock value. I like that. I believe in letting a villain or an evil person be a villain and an evil person. Mm-hmm. Let the reader have the reasons to see this is a bad person, that they are evil, that they need to be stopped. So I had scenes, I had something that had like that in this book, and the U.S. has a rather tumultuous climate right now on some social things.
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
I was like, let's just go ahead and pull that back. I think it'd be insensitive. It was kind of the same thing, like, I want to say they had a plan for a Godzilla something when Fukushima got hit. Mm-hmm. And they basically went, okay, we don't need stories about nuclear radioactivity
right
now.
Yeah, yeah. Like, yeah, no, that makes
a little,
sense.
A little sensitivity can go a long way. Like, let's not do this way. So the book didn't change in any major way. I just cut out one panel, because it is the children running away from professional pirates who do have a plethora of armed guards and weapons against, many children. So you're going to see some things get a little crazy.
So Pure Intent Issue 2 isn't the only book in this campaign. We have another one as well. Can you give us a little bit about what this is about, Mistress Izumi's Adult Lessons?
Yeah, so this is weird. What we decided to do with Izumi herself, she handles our Discord server, our Facebook, and our Instagram. She wanted to work on a book for a while now, and she likes things that are very lewd. She's very openly, she's a self-proclaimed professional pervert. So, okay, you want to work on a book. Well, we can fit one in. We can do a small one. And what I mean small, I mean it's 10 interior pages. And she's like, well, how lewd can I go? I was like, well, the rule is no penetration. Because I don't allow pornography. And the only reason for that is pornography is a Pandora's box, where once you open it, that label is going to be on you and all who are involved in it forever. And that's okay at my level, but if I ever get to it, if anything ever comes up, and knock on wood, pray to whatever God I believe in, I hear that phone call from Netflix, something like that, they're going to go, hey, we want to do this. Oh, we see you made a porno. We don't want to work with you.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
No one involved in our team wants to go through that, have that day come, in case any of them go off to do bigger things, in professional industry things one day. So instead, we're like, well, we can't make it pornographic. We can push the boundary. Mm-hmm. And it does push the boundary very close. And what the series essentially is its adult lessons, which was a result of a late night conversation between Izumi, Brooke, and myself, realizing that people our age weren't taught to do a lot of things. Our parents didn't teach us to do things that traditionally older generations taught their kids to do. Mm-hmm. In this book, one of those things is a very simple, basic plan for budgeting to buy things. And I was terrified people would think like, oh, you're trying to groom your customers into saving money for just to spend more money on you. I'm like, no. We'll use a fake item in the book. So the item had to be something over the top, like a crazy over the top item that'd be very obvious that we're not saying, hey, save up to buy this from us. So the item that she teaches you in the book, How to Budget For, is a very naughty item. It is a Mr. Suzumi body pillow with an on-a-hole insert and potential Fuda Fox attachment. This item does not exist, and it will never exist unless somebody out there makes it, because I'm not making that. But that's the point of the book. The book is, it's the lessons that adults should learn how to do, taught by a lascivious fox girl and many of her half-dressed and or naked friends.
And there's like potential for that to hit a lot of different beats, right? Like, hopefully, you could do so much.
Well, yeah, there's going to be more. This was an experiment issue. Like, if people like this, we'll do more. And they do like it, and there is a reason this one is not available in a PDF download, and that's because of something that we're working on right now to plan for the future. And what we're going to do, if people like it, we will do more Mr. Suzumi, and you'll see those. And it's just lessons that are adults that can help you. This one's budgeting. We'll do some stuff on other things that adult life would like to know. Like, how does credit work? Because no one seems to know how that works. You know, how do you fix your toilet? Things like basic things that, you know, our parent generation knew how to do. Mm-hmm. A lot of people my age weren't taught, and younger, weren't taught how to do. Most of my friends that I have, I'm sorry guys to call you out, can't handle money at all. And they're pretty much going, I have some friends who make very good money, but they still live paycheck to paycheck because they blow everything as soon as they get it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying you can't do that, live your life your way. But if you follow some things in this book, it might help you a little bit so that you're not having to worry about using credit cards. A great example I can give you on this one is that a character asks Mr. Suzumi in the book, why don't I just buy it on a credit card and worry about paying it off later? And then she spanks him and says, no, bad, you don't do that, because buying something on credit, hoping you can pay it off later, warning, foul language, pay off later is like having sex and then putting on a condom. You might have had fun, but now you're totally fucked.
Yeah.
Kind of what happens if you just buy things on credit. So don't do that.
Right here are some interiors, of course, for Pure Intent issue 2. These are gorgeous. Who is the artist on this?
The lead artist is Nila Nandita. She used to work with Foxy and Wolfie, which I do want to point out. I think it's above this. This campaign is dedicated to the memory of Kitsune Windsor. She was a very... Yeah, that one right there. She was a very dear friend of mine. She recently lost her battle with muscular dystrophy.
Sorry to hear
that. She created the Foxy and Wolfie series. She was published, I think Antarctic published her. She's done a lot of stuff. She has some stuff she's doing in Tokyo with some of her characters and stuff that she's created. She's a close friend of mine. And to speak of how close she was, she's the only person I give permission to have one of my characters in her book. And she gave me permission to use some of hers. And I'm going to be putting two of her characters as side characters in an upcoming series. Try to keep her memory alive and her story alive.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
But Nila was an artist I got from Kitsu. I always tell Nila I feel bad because she's really good at drawing like cute and wholesome things, like just making things feel natural and organic, but like warm. And I'm like, and I have you working on the two darkest, bloodiest series I've ever made. I feel like I'm so mean right now. she's now lead artist for Misi as well, and she's taking on Pure Intent. Difference is though, Pure Intent is colored by Gentle Nelly. He does the colors for those. He has a little more of a darker, grittier color style, which I think fit the universe better. Kremisi number 5, which is the next book coming out this year, where Nila is also the lead artist. That's colored by Creus. He colored like the little icons of Brook and Azumi right there. So his color is a lot more vibrant. He's a lot brighter, which will be fun to see a fully colored Kremisi for the first time in a story that one is the bloodiest and lewdest issue in all of Kremisi. So that'd be fun to see where that goes.
So let's go ahead. We'll skim over some of these tiers. $5 to get a digital basic copy of Pure Intent issue 2. Awesome price for that.
Because I'm not trying to price gouge anybody. That's why if you look on some of those icons for the reward tiers, you will see a little round circle with Benny, or one of our mascots, Benny, on it. Those things are on sale. It's Year of the Rabbit. We have two rabbit mascots.
Oh, that's really cool.
So we've marked some things down for Year of the Rabbit in the honor of our two bunny babes.
That's awesome.
But this also means that items on this campaign, most of them are going to be cheaper than they ever will be again. And it's like, I'll give an example, like something I saw on our fan server. Somebody said they were saving up to buy something on the campaign, and Azumi went and told them, look, we love that, but please don't spend money you need to live. And like, that's why we try to do deals. We try to do combos, mark things down. I try to put, like, right there, that one's on sale. Like, I mark them down Because, yes, of course I want you to back this. I want your money. Absolutely. Yeah, I'll be upfront about that. I'm a businessman. I want your money. But I want you happy, and I want you, like, secure first. Mm-hmm. Make sure you got all your things you need first, because reality of it is we can live without a comic book. I don't want you to, but we can. And I don't want anybody spending, you know, their baby's bread money or their rent money on things that aren't essential to staying alive. So we try to alleviate that a little bit, because we do. Our backers are our lifeblood, man. If we can help them out any way, we will.
We have the physical copy of this, $10, awesome price as well. And then we run into some of those variants, all awesome prices. 16, we got the physical. Is this the physical? Yeah, of Mistress Izumi's Adult Lessons.
That was all that comes in physical.
So that'll be 16, awesome price on that as well. Do you have any favorite tiers that you want to take a look at? Like
choosing a favorite kid. It's there's two covers of this one I really love. I love them all, but I mean, there's two that really stand out to me. I love the Tactical Brook cover that is on there. That one by Lena Dai. So we're doing a series of tactical covers this year. Every campaign we'll do will have one of our mascots and some tactical gear.
Oh, that's
to
cool.
Celebrate the upcoming book we have called The Manticore, CORPS, like Marine Corps. And that is a series that will be coming out hopefully next year. And there's an ad for it right there. When you buy those particular covers, they come with the uncolored first chapter preview, which is about four to six pages, I think, long. And what the Manticore is a World War I high fantasy story, where there's an etchy comedy military-esque tale of an entire squad of babes tasked with winning the war, and the problem being that none of them are qualified to barely even get in military service, let alone in special operations. So they will not win because they are that good. The idea behind that is I came from a military family, but I have intentionally not asked any of my friends who are actively serving for like more details on how this work, because I want to be as ignorant of this as I can, so that everything that the squad does is so unorthodox and doesn't make sense. Okay, I think it's funnier. Because anybody can, you know, we're used to Call of Duty, you know, where somebody just comes in, oh, I'm just this tough and this amazing, I can win every time because I'm just this great, you know, special forces murder machine god. No, this squad is they're kind of idiots, and they just they get lucky a lot, or something like that happens. The best example I give anybody about that series coming up is like if there's a machine gun nest, I'm like, all right, we're gonna take it out. Let's just run down the middle, and the people on the gun go, well, they're running right at us. They wouldn't do that's a trick. Point the gun to the side because somebody's flanking us. There's no way they just charge right down the middle to get us. No one's that stupid. Kind of. Yes, they are.
And we're just going to go ahead and kind of just scroll through while you're talking. Because I remember last time you have a decent amount of tiers, so I want to make sure we have a chance to kind of just scroll through and look.
On this one, so yeah, it's a lot.
So we don't want to talk about all of them, but we'll at least get a chance to visually see them.
No, the VG right there has Alice from Kremisi. She's over there getting teased by Li Hua right there. This is her first appearance in this book. If you're familiar with the Kremisi series, Li Hua is kind of like Alice, but she's a virtual intelligence computer program represented by a holographic woman. In Alice's case, though, Alice is a little different, where she has more freedom than she's legally supposed to have as a computer. Mm-hmm. She actually has authentic emotion. Li Hua there was, I can't say where she comes from, but the person who originally has her is a deviant, so she is more risque than they would normally be. That's why she has this massive boob window with a sizable chest. But she makes her debut in this book, and I'm looking forward to doing more with her. We'll see a lot more of her in Pure Intent. That's one of my favorite covers this time, is Benny. So Mitsu Blinger is my lead artist on Sucky Busted, and she also has her personal mascot is Benny Blinger right there. And she turned into a psychopathic murderer and killed that cover for Easter and for Year of the Rabbit.
It's gorgeous. So, I was going to say, you have absolutely just gorgeous covers.
I love that cover. The more I love it. Because to me, like, Benny is just, to me, so hot. But I know it's like, she even, by Mitsu's own admission, Benny is kind of a chubbier girl, a little heavier. And I love that the bunnies that are in there are chunky bunnies. That's so, a chubby bunny is adorable, and I love it. I want to hug
the bunnies. I love that you guys are hitting that as well. You know, a lot of people are for whatever reason, don't want to venture, you know, in that territory. And I think shining a light on all sizes is an awesome move.
Well, it's like, when we first started this, people asked me why Kremisi characters are so thin. I was like, well, I didn't think about that. But mostly because you see Shay all the time, and he's almost emaciated. He drinks alcohol, doesn't eat much food. Kind of makes sense. He wouldn't have much mass. But then we're like, well, we do like everything. And I think Benny is, in my opinion, perfect. That's Benedita, who's on that cover tier with her. She is Benny's stepsister. She's also our new shipping manager. So this is her debut. It's her debut cover. And she is a very buff bunny girl. And we thought, well, how can we do this? So I pulled an idea. I saw a meme about I like big buns. And it was just pictures of rabbits, like just doing a sploot, all laying next to each other. I was like, that's a good double entendre.
Yeah.
What if we did this? So now we have the rabbit holding big buns for the big cheeks that Benedita has, as well as her being a physically large rabbit girl. We have some medals this time. We have a lot of exclusives going on. That Manticore preview is also available as an add-on. It's only like $4. I just want people to see it, so we're not really charging a whole lot for it. We have the Chinese New Year. I like to do theme covers on my runs. This one is the Chinese New Year theme because you're the rabbit. We have several rabbit girls. So we'll do that. So everybody's got kind of a Year of the Rabbit kind of theme going on. A lot of these covers. We try to offer, probably is why I have so many tiers, is I try to offer individual and then combos. And if you buy the combo, it's a little cheaper than buying them individually. And I try to do that to help people cut down what they got to spend. I absolutely want people to come in here and pledge for comics and all that, but I don't want to break your bank in the process. We'll do one of those per run. I think it's limited to two of those, where in this particular one, if you get that, we will draw you on a cover with Benedita. With Benedita, can be very naughty. The rule there is simple, that we don't draw real life people in sexual encounters or naked. I had a backer one time who backed one, and he said, hey man, could I have, it was a thing where you could get up here with one of the girls from Kermisi, and the girls can be naughty. He's like, hey man, can I have my wife with me in this picture? He's like, sure, okay, we'll do that. But I was like, well, hold on, but real quick, please don't send me naked pictures of your wife.
Yeah, I was about to say,
you guys have to have, that was my first thought, like, please don't do that. You have to, he goes, no, our clothes are all, I'm like, okay, cool. Because like, we don't draw real people naked. You cannot be lewd. The character can, because the character's fictitious. You cannot be lewd. I don't want to know what that legal territory is like, but I presume that water's pretty hot. So I'm not doing that. But I was like, please don't tell this guy to send me naked pictures of his wife, man. I don't want you guys doing that. And they, no, I'm like, okay, cool, we're good. I don't want to do that to you. That would feel so awkward and weird. Then you get to Mr. Suzumi, which is at the bottom. And I did this because Pure Intent, you could be 14 years old, about 15 or 16, and pick up Pure Intent and read it. You'd probably be okay. Mr. Suzumi, you need to be 18. So I put that at the bottom of the campaign. That way it's, this is up here is where, you can look at this down here. Okay. Kids, don't come here. Adults, you can come in. Trying to separate that out, make it a little bit more accessible.
It's like the wall at Family Video. It's like.
Yeah. So that one wall, like, you can't go into unless you're like 18.
Well, that is awesome.
Please unlock that cover. That's an ultra kinky with Benedita and Azumi by JR Pulse. That was a stretch goal unlock that just came unlocked. That is an extremely lewd and kinky cover. Mr. Suzumi has one more cover coming later in the campaign that will be a special collector's edition cover that we actually let backers and our social media vote upon the cosplay she'd be wearing.
Oh, that's cool.
It is finished and it'll come out in a little while. It is very, very lewd. It's probably one of the lewdest things I will allow to come out of my shop. But I anticipate that shock value will be well liked. I don't know yet, but I'm hoping. We also offer digitals in all of our books here from previous camp. What we do, because I have a bunch of series that I do. I think we have like 5 or 6 series in active production, so there's always a lot going on. We have some standees here. Li Hua has, that's a special one. That one is only going to be on this campaign. Those are her usual colors. You saw earlier, it's the red outfit with the black hair. So for this, it's a first appearance special. And after this campaign, it will be gone forever. It's never coming back.
So I love the merch. I love the add-ons and the tiers. And I know you said you felt like you might have had a lot, but like, I don't know. It costs nothing to make the tier, right? It's free, and you possibly lose out on a sale.
You take into account production costs and shipping costs, how much something weighs, how big is it, those kind of things. And I can give an example of that. It's like I had somebody message me in Spain one time asking why my shipping prices were higher than, I guess, a board game he backed. And I was like, oh, that's easy. Because either A, the board game regular reward tier is charging enough to make up for that shipping difference, or B, he's taking an L on shipping.
Yeah.
Which a lot of creators do. They will take an L on the shipping. We can't do that at the capacity we operate. So I take into account everything beforehand, but I also try to price things down as much as I can. The usually add-ons are just an extra dollar, and that's because of just at that point, just materials, extra bag and board, extra paper, extra bubble wrap, whatever required. We have a couple of books from other previous series on here. Kermisi, of course, was my first that I ever did. We have some of the covers from that available on this campaign, including some by Lyrics, who she is amazing. She also has covers. She did that one main Leaf Walk cover on this run.
Yeah, these are that, gorgeous.
Yeah, I got really lucky with the artists. They did a really good job. I'll point out that the one, if you go over for 1 second, the one, the bottom there, the two blonde girls, the girl on the left is actually from one of Kitsune's characters from Foxy and Wolfie. So we have the two blonde. We realized we both had blonde, bespectacled, blue-eyed girls. Like, well, let's put them together then. That'd be fun.
Which, yeah, these are gorgeous.
Number five takes that same idea and expands upon it with another guest character. But we'll see that in the near future. That's Pure Intent number one. That includes Izumi's Naughty cover, along with some other things. We also have a new standee on that. Mei Lin returns as a Jiangshi. Here's the best part. The seals on her body, they actually say things. I don't ask me to read because I can't read Mandarin Chinese. But the artist who did that for me is from, I think he's from a Mandarin Chinese speaking country.
That's really cool.
But he's like basically it says like horny release is like essentially like what it roughly translates to. So I said to another one of my artists who's from China, I'm like, hey man, can you translate? Is this right? Is this something else? Like, no, that's what it says. All right, cool. I can't read Mandarin Chinese. We wanted to make sure it has a little more authentic feel to it. Sucky Buster,
you have
of course,
a ton
again.
Of series. I didn't even realize this the first time around. Holy crap, Isaac.
Kermisi, Pure Intent, Foxy Vacation, Sucky Busted, Manticore. Am I missing anything? Mistress Izumi. I think it's all that we've shown off yet. We have one or two others we're working on. But my strategy is a little bit different than some creators. So we'd work on a lot at one time.
I mean, your strategy is working. I mean, every strategy I'm sure is different for everybody, but whatever you're doing for you, you're killing it, man. Yeah, because the numbers don't lie. Like you said, the numbers do not lie. You know, they're there. And the last campaign was a killer. You're killing it right now, you know, a week into it. Isaac, what would you like to say to anyone who might be on the fence about backing this if you just had a few moments to address them?
Two things. One, if you are a fan of things like Hunger Games, Iron-Blooded Orphans, Promised Neverland, those kind of stories, or if you like a darker, more serious story, you're really going to like Pure Intent. It's in the same vein. You're going to love that. But if you're more somebody who likes the more cultured kind of taste, like ecchi series, like High School DxD, or Interspecies Reviewers, or Monster Musume, I think you're really going to enjoy Mistress Izumi, especially if you want to be entertained and educated at the same time. I think you'll enjoy that. I would say that remember that when you back us on Kickstarter, not just me, any creator on Kickstarter, what you're really doing is making dreams come true, and you're also putting food on my table. You're putting food in his bowl. You are keeping us all alive and letting us continue pursuing our dreams instead of just giving some executive at Marvel or Disney or Warner Brothers or Disney or any of those companies another golden toilet. You are helping any of us, and I say this for anyone who's on Kickstarter, any independent creator who's just trying to make something they care about. You're also, if you go to Kickstarter, you're going to get more passion. And we're experiencing this amazing thing in comics, kind of, where it's like there's this giant rift now with DC and Marvel, where all I see anybody do now is get mad at them. Like they can't seem to make anybody happy. I'm not really reading them much anymore, so I don't know. But I just see everyone's mad at them. And from what I see that is a lot more independents are stepping up now because the market's more available to them. Yeah. All of us. It's easier to do. But the more mad everybody gets at Marvel at DC, the better it is for independence in some ways. So try giving the independent creators a shot. I think you'll find that it's a lot more unexpected, especially if you come from the manga universe, where myself does, anime and manga. And one thing that makes anime and manga amazing is, I'll use Akame Ga Kill as an example, which is an amazing show. Mm-hmm. You don't know whatever's going to happen because main characters can and will die.
Yeah, yeah.
Bad. I mean, if you talk about Gundam... Gundam used to be like, oh, this character's really cool. Then there's a fist where that cockpit used to be, and they're dead. They're gone.
Yeah.
Or you like, this guy's really cool. Hope he survives. Well, they comment he gets turned into hamburger meat at some point in time. So it's like, that level of unexpected, like, holy crap, these things are different. Whereas if you know, most time if you read a mainstream American comic, it's pretty safe to say that stuff's not going to happen to some of the characters. Not always, of course, but sometimes. I think you're in for a lot more surprise and a lot more creativity in the independent market. The only downside to that is you do have to sometimes claw through some things you don't like to find what you do. Mm-hmm. I've had to do it. Everybody's had to do it.
Yeah.
But just give it a chance. And I think if you enjoy those serious stories, or you just want to collect covers, or you like sexy ladies, especially like sexy ladies, you should pick up a show.
Yes.
Because that contains characters from across all of our books who show up scantily clad and or not clad at all.
Ooh, so, man, holy crap. Everyone watching, be sure to make this dream happen today by backing. And once again, if you can't back, put this on Facebook, Twitter, anywhere you can. That allows a link. Word of mouth is 100% free. It costs nothing to do. And it just...
Please.
You might have a friend or a family member who's going to love either one of these, so make that happen for them too. So, Isaac, you've been on the show before. You know the drill. We like asking for a little bit of advice. And I think with someone who's ran multiple campaigns, really big on organization and number crunching, like, what would be some of your biggest advice for someone to kind of help keep their campaign a little bit more organized, you know, maybe the first or second time around?
I always tell you the same two things. The first thing is, do not screw with the backers. Because any creator who hurts the backers, we hate you. I want you to know that. Any of us who do this, we hate you for that. Because the backers are our lifeblood. And one reason why I think Kickstarter is more successful than some of its counterparts, like Indiegogo, I feel like they love their creators and they focus on making the creator happy. Kickstarter doesn't care as much about the creators. It cares about the backers. And I know as a creator, someone's like, well, that sucks. Well, the backers are the reason we're here, though. So it makes sense to make sure they're the ones that are happy. So the first piece of advice I would give is be clear, be honest, treat your backers with respect and love because they really are great. Kickstarter backers are a fantastic group of people. They are so patient and understanding as long as you treat them with honesty and respect.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing I'm going to tell you is track everything you do when you do this. Learn to love spreadsheets. Google Docs will give you spreadsheets for free. You can go in there and just create them and download them onto your machine if you're using the Microsoft Office Suite, or because I hate Microsoft and their Office Suite is overpriced and stupid now, go with Open Office because it's the same thing, but it's free.
Mm-hmm.
You keep track of all of that stuff, tracking numbers, dates, every cent that goes in or out. Just keep track of that stuff. And I know it's tedious and it's boring because believe me, it's not fun to sit here and stare at numbers on a spreadsheet. It's before it. When I make a Kickstarter, what you're seeing is the product of about 1.5 months of me making graphics, plans, and doing math. I've had other creators offer to hire me to make their campaign pages for them. I'm like, dude, I'm so excited you asked me to do that. There's no way in hell.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Don't have time.
Thank you.
It takes me a month and a half with me knowing everything we have available to us. I don't know how long it would take me to make one for somebody else. But now I have to know, like, I need to know, what's your production capacity? What's this? What's your budget? Where can you get this from? What if this happens? Like, have you taken that into account? So that's the two things I'd say if you're going to do a Kickstarter. Just be honest with people and then just be ready to do numbers. Sit there and do the math as hard as you can. And I know it sucks. It's not fun. It's not the exciting part at all. And it's why you see stories like Mighty Number 9 that happened, where they had to come back and ask for more money on, like, what, 2 or 3+ separate occasions?
Yeah.
Because they didn't do this step. They didn't sit down and track the numbers first. Also, if you're going to do this, the thing I will say is don't do what I did and start with your passion project that runs like 3 different arcs. Start small, go from there, and then let it evolve to more grandiose over time. I didn't do that. It was a mistake. I regret it. Please don't do that to yourself, because what's going to happen is you end up tearing all your hair out and stressing out because you want to do this grandiose thing, and you may not yet understand what's involved with that level of flair, and it's a lot. So start simple, be honest, track your numbers.
I think hitting all those beats, you know, just sets you up for the perfect recipe for success. Thank you for the advice, Isaac. Before we let you go, what are you reading? You know, what are you watching? Any video games you're playing? You know, let's chum it up a little bit.
Well, I'm very excited. I think today the new DLC for Warhammer 3 came out, the Chaos War. So I'm excited to check that out. It blew me away. We had an interview with Henry Cavill, he's Henry Flippin' Cavill. That man could walk into a room and walk out with nothing but girlfriends somehow.
Yeah.
But he, in an interview, he said that he loves the Warhammer video game, the Total War Warhammer game. He's like, well, I can play this and then drop it and go act for 6 months and then come back and just keep playing it. And I know that gaming has pushed us all to a more hardcore competitive kind of mentality, which I'm not really down with. But as an adult with the job and everything else, it's nice I can play this game and I can work for two weeks and come back and still play it and not have to worry about it. That's skip a beat. I love that. That's what I'm playing game-wise. Watching-wise, I am watching Space Dandy, which I know is a little older by modern anime standards, but please know that because of my profession, what I do, I don't have time to watch anime like I used to. But that series is an absolute blessing, and if you haven't seen it and you're a fan of the classic space westerns, Trigun, Outlaw Star, and Bebop, you really need to watch Space Dandy because, oh my God, it's hilarious. And it's,
did you see the new Trigun?
I haven't seen it yet. I was going to wait for a while and let it like finish and see what people were saying about it. I wasn't a huge fan of the new Vash design because, again, it seems so pumped out and like generic. Yeah. Where his old one, that hand-drawn coat just flowing in the wind and how it looked so awesome. And like
and raggedy too, right? Yeah, yeah.
It looked amazing.
Trigun was like my first introduction. I remember seeing that, what, like 2 or 3 in the morning? When I was a kid, it was awesome. And the thing is, like, it was on Cartoon Network or Toonami or whatever, and I never got to see the full series. And it was like, dude, it's just great. I remember there was a fan-made mashup of Cowboy Bebop and Vash the Stampede. It was phenomenal. It, you know, it never was, like, a real thing, but they mashed them together. It was, like, perfect. They should have done a crossover.
Well, especially because I think Bebop and Outlaw Star are both Studio Sunrise. Mm-hmm. So I think they come from the same... And they came out the same year... around the same time. They're both products of the same studio, different writers and creators, but same studio. Space Dandy pays homage to a lot of those in little small subtle ways, I think, and it's hilarious, and it has no continuity, but it does this amazing thing, which is only a handful of things I've ever read can do this, read or watch can do it, where it can have you laughing one episode and crying the next.
Ooh.
And that is such a rare skill. Mm-hmm. Reading wise, I can actually say the exact same vein, I'm reading the full color hardback version of High School of the Dead. I'm reading that. I've seen the anime and I never read the manga, and it's a shame that it won't get finished because the writer passed away. I've always loved the way they handled the violence in that one. The blood is just so over the top and silly. It's also famous because it has the anime has the famous bullet passing between the two bouncing boobs scene, which is silly, but it let it be what it is.
I've literally seen that.
Everyone's seen that GIF.
It was like a meme. It's like the anime your girlfriend. It's like the anime you're watching when your girlfriend's not looking, than the anime you're watching when your girlfriend looks and pays attention. And the show is like, hilarious.
That's a series. It takes itself seriously at times, and doesn't others. And it plays out really well. I've also been reading Interspecies Reviewers, which I know these are all pervert ones, but. Keep in mind, I just came out of reading Little Devils, which is a family-friendly series. Very heartwarming, very wholesome, very cute.
Yeah, you got to throw that little bit in there. So
I go through sports. I'm like, okay, I'm going to read wholesome. I'm going to read sexy. I'm going to read violent, and then I go back around to it again. In a way that be well-rounded and enjoy a little bit of everything.
That bleeds into your what you work on, right? Like
exactly, you have, a little bit of everything. Try to keep things rounded and balanced. As a man who once did nothing wrong once said, perfectly balanced is all things should be. Because that guy never did anything wrong ever. The entire movie, two movies he's in.
Yeah,
he's just great. He's just a visionary. We just weren't ready for him. Species Reviewers is another one where that series is the premise is so hyper-pervy, yet the manga has at least one issue that is like so heartwarming. Like pure people. Mm-hmm. It's almost had me in tears. Like, this is so well done. I did not expect writing this good or a lesson this heartwarming to come out of a series about guys who bang prostitutes of various fantasy races. What in the hell? This is amazing that you pulled this kind of emotion mm-hmm. into a story like this. I also have a lot of respect for that series because it does something that people seem to overlook, and that it shows that the girls who are the sex workers, they want to be there. They choose that profession. Even the main characters treat them with respect. They mm-hmm. listen to them. And it just really kind of forces like a positivity on sex workers, like pushes that idea like, hey, these people, they aren't just things to use or hit. These are people with their own life. And this is just what they do. And I love that message. I think we need more of that in our society now. Because we feel like we look down on people for a lot of like you see a guy walking around with a body pillow at a con, people look at the guy like he's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Why? What did he do that's weird?
Just living life.
Yeah, like what's the deal, man? Like, but and it's weird going to cons now because I have two folders on my tables at cons. I'll be at Bold City Con this weekend, actually, here in Jacksonville. One folder anybody can open. One says freeze, you must be 18 to open. And the last con I did, there was a lady next to me at her table next to me. And I asked, do people get mad at you? I'm like, no. She's like, girls don't get mad about you having that stuff. Girls are the ones who buy it. She didn't believe me. And then have the other con, she's like, oh my God. I'm like, yeah, it's always like chicks that buy the stuff at cons. And I don't know if that's because conventions are just that kind of crowd, mm-hmm. or if it's because if a chick walks around with naked anime girl art, everybody thinks she's cool. Oh, she's cool, she's open. But if a guy does it, we kind of, people like, oh, he's kind of creepy. That's a double standard. It's not fair at all.
I see what it's you mean. Like,
the people I know who are the nicest and the most gentlemanly are the ones that have the most
body pillows.
The ones who have the most of that stuff. I mean, my godson's father, we, as a joke, bought him a body pillow of Soldier 76 that he has to have in his house now.
Like, yeah. That's hilarious. I love that. Isaac, this has been one hell of a chat. Thank you so much. Everyone watching. Right here is the link to check this out one more time. It is time for us to wrap up. I hope you all have a lovely new comic book day, but most importantly, guys, keep it geekly.